Otherworldlyculture.com.
They're here.
Alive. It's alive. It's alive.
Otherworldlyculture.com presents Dead On Movie Reviews.
Salutations and mutilations. You're listening to Otherworldly Culture presents Dead On Movie Reviews. Tonight, we will present horror movie reviews and lively debate here on OtherworldlyCulture.com and on future select Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can join our live chat at the time by clicking on the live shows link on the OtherworldlyCulture.com website or joining us here on Twitch at our tag of Otherworldly Culture. I'm your host, Tim Kretschmann, coming to you from the land of lakes and landfills, beautiful and smelly Muskego, Wisconsin. It's my honor to introduce to you the Faculty of Fear panel presenting tonight's lectures. And we start with his new theme song. Hailing from the Motor City of Detroit, Michael... Michael Cieslik is a lifetime reader and writer of horror, mystery, and speculative fiction. He has served as an officer in the Great Lakes Association of Horror Writers and is the editor of the Eerie Tales Anthologies. Michael is the editor-in-chief of Dragon's Roost Press, and his works have appeared in a number of collections, including DOA Extreme Horror, Dead Science, Vicious Verses and Reanimated Rhymes, and the collaborative steampunk novel Army of Brass. Check him out at thedragonsroost.net. He's Michael Cieslik. Hi, Michael.
Hello, hello.
And next, with her new theme song, Peggy Christie is an author from Michigan that has written books like Hell Hath No Fury, Dark Doorways, and contributed to the short story collections Eerie Tales, Myths, and Mayhem. She is also proud to be the owner of the lamest scream ever recorded on Scream at the Screen. You can check her out at www.themonkeyisin.com. She's Peggy Christie. And little Mikey Exler is back again as the denizen of the dismal. He's the purveyor of the putrid, the exciting exclaimer of glorious gloom wrestling up from his stony tomb. He's the monster, the mad ghoul, the glad, and that sack of mumbling, moaning pus that barfs out baloney. He's one, and there are many, but he's our very own panel purveying provocateur, Coach Michael Exler. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on. It's always such a good time.
I think we're going to have a good time. We got some great movies coming up on today's show, and we're going to be reviewing them. So keep your ass in your seat, sharpen your pencil, and let's get unruly with the Faculty of Fear. And we're going to throw things over first to... Okay, that was supposed to be Mike. I'm sitting here looking, and I'm like, that is not Mike. I figured that out for myself. It could be. Hey, you know, things happen sometimes. Oh, now what? Okay.
Still not.
We're fixing it. It's being fixed as we speak.
Just too pretty for Skype.
Oh, God. Oh, I see what happened. That wasn't supposed to happen. There, now let's try this. There we go. There we go. Get those podcast awards all warmed up. My Michael, save me from this. What have you been watching?
I've been watching Possessor because I thought that I would watch a David Cronenberg movie for this review, but I could not decide which one, so I thought, hell with it, I'll watch his kids' movie because I hadn't seen it yet. And I am glad that I did. I, immediately after watching this, went on to Facebook and asked if anyone knew of a word that meant both beautiful and repellent at the same time. Because I figured, like, the Germans would have a word for it, right? I didn't get anything.
Now, hold on here. As the resident German, hold on. We do have Schadenfreude. We have that one.
I figured they would have something, you know?
I think we do call it Exler.
Call it Exler. That's not nice.
It's not cool at all.
Sorry, go on.
Say, my next door neighbor, Peter, did give me the phrase, puts the gross in engrossing. So I had to make sure I threw that out.
Oh, nice. Because
I thought that was absolutely amazing. This is a beautiful movie that may make you sick to your stomach. It is, like, from the first moment, the first thing you see is someone taking a device, looks about to be the width of the old school headphone cord, not the ones that we're using now, but the ones that plugged into your 8-track system, and jamming it into her skull, and just blood starts pouring out, and you're thinking, yep, this is going to be a Cronenberg-esque movie. The plot of which is, there is a the main, sort of mainish character of Tasman Voss is an assassin, and she's hired to kill like a scenario's worth of people by entering another person, taking them over, like possessing them, if you will, hence the title, and then setting up the situation where people are killed and then she commits suicide in that person, wiping out all traces of their ever having been there. The first one that we see her do, I'm not going to go into any spoilers or anything like that, but you're like, oh, we see how this works. And then there is a fascinating bit where she's kind of being talked back, almost deprogrammed, to they're making sure that she's all the way back, that there's no residual lingering memories from the other person. Tasman Voss is played by Andrea Riseborough, who did a great job, and her handler is Jennifer Jason Leigh, who I didn't even recognize at first.
What?
You kind of get the idea that she's being groomed to take over as this handler position, but she's obviously having issues because she's not remembering things. She's split up with her husband and estranged from her child. She wants to get back with her. The handler doesn't think it's a good idea. She's thinking she should take some time off, but there's a big, important case that comes up that they need her for. So she enters. I have notes. She enters Colin Tate, played really, really well by Christopher Abbott, who is hired. She's hired to, in his body, kill this business person. And the moment you see the business person, you're like, of course, this person is going to have to die because it's Sean Bean. And I won't tell you whether or not he actually does die, but going into it, I didn't know it was Sean Bean. And I'm like, okay, yeah, she's hired to kill Sean Bean. This should be easy. She has to blow on him. He's in a movie. He dies. That's what he does. But to kill him and his daughter, who is the fiance of the Colin Tate person that she entered. And the moment you see him with Sean Bean, you're like, yeah, this mofo needs to die. But things start getting all twisted. There's like some bleed back where she's not in complete control of him at all times. And she's having these weird flashes. And then he's having flashes where he's kind of taking back over. and I'm not going to give anything away because it is really, really well done. The actor, Christopher Abbott, does a great job of being Colin Tate and also being Voss when she's in Colin Tate. You can see, like, the moment that she reasserts control, he's playing exactly the way she was played before. And then when he's kind of seeping back in, he has completely different mannerisms. His vocal patterns change slightly. It was really a standout performance by him, I thought. There's a whole thing where the job happens and he does not, she does not get out of him, and it's kind of a big mystery suspense thing, all of which led into what I have in my notes as, all caps, holy shit ending, not underlined, a stupid twist like some directors, H2G, which means honest to God, did not see that coming, which is totally understandable because I was so invested in the movie. I was too far in, as it were.
That's what
she
said.
I might have seen it coming if I was, like, doing something else while I was watching this, if I was, you know, kind of fussing around on the computer.
Right.
But this had drawn me in so completely that when that ending came, I was like, oh, holy crap. And it makes perfect sense with what we've had leading into this. This was again, I have notes all about the visuals in here all throughout. David Cronenberg's movies are they're visually compelling, but they're really gross. You know, like if you think of like some of the scenes in Videodrome of him pulling the weapon out of his stomach or putting videotapes in, or some of the scenes in Dead Ringers or just the head explosion in Scanner, that's all, it's like, wow, that's amazing, but it's not pretty. This movie is actually really pretty. There are some scenes of just disgusting gore and blood splatter patterns that are the cinematography is astounding. It's something that you shouldn't look at and think, wow, that was really pretty, but it really is.
Peggy, just so you know, I do have the sound file of him just saying how blood patterns are beautiful. So I'll make that available to you later on, okay?
That is not even among the top 1,000 bad things I've said in Peggy's presence. It's true. This was a solid A+ from me.
Oh my goodness! You got to give me a second here. Now come on.
Not a chance.
The hell!
There are buttons to push.
There, yes. There's a lot of buttons. An A+. I thought you might be going there. That was a rave review.
If I'd said, yeah, it was a definite C-, you probably would have flipped.
That has happened on this show, and it makes me angry every time it happens. Has anybody else on the panel seen this movie?
Jeez. No.
I have not.
I've been hearing both great and bad reviews of this thing. So it must be splitting people, but I'm guessing you're on the positive side there, Mike. I kind of pieced that together like an investigator. I put that together. All right, fantastic. Again, like to thank everybody that came into the chat room. It's getting a little busier in there. Nice to see that. And we are now going to go to... by the way, there's no way on earth that Jeff has seen this movie, so he's just lying in there. Peggy, and it's your face and your name. That's impressive. So we got that going. Peggy, what have you been watching?
I've actually been watching a Korean horror TV series called Squid Game.
That's blowing up on Netflix, isn't it?
Yep. Netflix has been, Netflix Korea has actually been putting out a lot of original Korean drama content, so good for me. That's kind of my jam.
Yeah, you love that stuff.
So I'll try not to give away any spoilers, because this is still available to stream. But the basic premise of it is there is this secret society that finds people that are so desperately in financial dire straits that they will do anything to get money. It could be because they've gambled away all their money, they've committed fraud and lost billions and billions of won. They could have taken out loans from, what do they call this, loan sharks, and they can't pay them back. And if they don't, then their families get threatened and blah, blah, blah. So they are approached by a stranger at some random spot, and they say, hey, you know, if you want to earn some money, you just got to come meet me at this certain time and we'll pay you to play games. And they're thinking, okay, that's pretty simple. So they are picked up by this van. They get gassed and blindfolded and everything, so they don't know where they're going. They wake up, and you see in these images, they're all in the green tracksuits. Yeah. It's like all these people are just in this big warehouse, basically, like a barrack. And they're like, okay, here are the rules. There are 6 games you have to get through. And if you succeed in getting through all 6, you win money. Now, every person that's in it is worth, I think, in the pot, like about $1 million. We'll talk U.S. dollars.
Okay.
So every time someone is eliminated from a game, that $1 million goes into the pot for the rest of the people who are continuing to play. So it makes sense that more people want to win and maybe even try and start to trip up others into losing. Ooh. It's kind of, think of this as like the Running Man meets Battle Royale is kind of what it,
I was about to say, this is getting into the territory of one of my favorite genres that is based on a single short story, which would be The Most Dangerous Game. This is kind of rolling into that territory.
It's almost kind of like a little bit more hands-off, like sophisticated version of the great of that.
Okay.
It's, you know, this, you know, VIP, the secret society. It's like, you know, they're kind of, well, we'll take advantage of these guys for our entertainment, and this, you know, we get to have some fun, and then blah 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 blah. So. And it's almost obvious kind of right off the bat that, mm-hmm. you know, you get into the game. They're like, okay, if you win, you go on. If you're eliminated, you're out. And by eliminated.
Well, you enjoyed this enough to review it. So I know people got killed in horrible, yeah, disfiguring ways.
It's kind of obvious, like, right from the get-go. You know, I mean, it's not like it's a secret. Right. And they kind of let it in the first episode, you find out what the hell is going on. So, which I really actually appreciated. So,
well, who's going to fall for this anymore, right? Because the Most Dangerous Game came out like in the 30s. It's been about 35 movies. You know that if there's big money on the line, they got to be putting something up. It's going to be their life. They got nothing else to put up.
And that's the whole point. It's like all these people that are the players of this game have absolutely nothing. They have nothing going for them. Mm-hmm. They either play the game or they go back out into real life where it's absolute hell. Their lives are threatened. Their livelihoods are threatened. They'll be in jail. You know, I mean, there is absolutely.
They work retail.
Oh, my God.
Goodness. Goodness. But, now, is this, I do have to ask you, because you do a lot of these Korean things. Is this a subtitled or is this a dubbed one?
I believe there's both options.
Okay.
I prefer to do the subtitles, even though I know, like, the translations aren't always spot on. Like, the things they say, I think they either do a literal translation instead of an interpretation of what they mean. So sometimes you're kind of like, why would they say that? That doesn't make any sense. But in the context of like Korean culture, it would.
I'll tell you, when it comes to subtitles, there are some films where I'm like, that's cool. It's no problem. Korean mm-hmm. films, a lot of times it seems like those subtitles are running slower than they're talking. And it drives me absolutely crazy. There's been like 3 or 4 movies where I'm like, I know that probably came out like 10 seconds ago. What's going on here? It just drives me nuts because I think the rate of speed they can speak in Korean must be a faster rate than, Like, if I ever watch a French or a German movie with subtitles, it's like they got all the time in the world to get those titles up there. It's like, oh, I'll get that out there eventually. Don't worry about it. But these Korean things, sometimes they're going so damn fast. The subtitles don't keep up. So I actually appreciate the dubbed.
I think that's part of, like, the translation or interpretation thing. It's, like, the phrase that they use to mean, like, you know, kill two birds with one stone is actually, like, 16, 20 words longer than what we would say.
Right.
And that's why it's, like, that, you know, subtitle comes up and they're still talking. And you're, like, wait. So it is kind of funny because every now and again I'll pick out a word that I'll finally have learned and I'll be like, that's not what they said. You know, I'll compare it to I was like, hey, it's only taken me like 15 years, but I'm figuring it out.
I felt like I knew some Japanese after I read Shogun. And I then watched a Japanese movie and decided maybe I didn't learn anything during the process.
Yeah, no. Now
I noticed there's different colors in the pictures I was able to find. And it was a goofy looking doll, which I didn't put on here. Is there some sort of crazy looking doll?
That's one of the games.
Okay, so that's real.
I think that's the only game that like Americans would be familiar with. It's basically red light, green light.
Okay.
So that doll would turn its head and say green light, and everyone would run up, and her head would spin when she said red light, and she has cameras in her eyes. And if you didn't stop, like, even if you just jiggled a little,
right?
Her eye would catch the movement, and you'd be eliminated.
Oh, wow.
And all the guys in the red are, like, the soldiers. So depending on the symbol on their face, either they're, like, the enforcers with the guns, they're the people that do the cleanup duty, or they're the ones, like, in charge of just getting people in line. You know, it was all a hierarchy.
Wow.
It was very interesting. Yeah. It was actually really cool. What I really liked about it is the character development was very, very well done. There's 450-something players in the game. But, you know, the main group of, like, the main actors, there were, you know, probably 6 to 10 of them. And all of them were well developed. So enough to the point where you'd be like, yes, I want to back this horse. Or no, I want. And if you watch that, you'll understand that pun that I just made. So, or you got, you know, that guy's meant to be a real asshole, but he has this interesting backstory. And it was I was actually quite impressed with the character backstories and the developments. And
that's important.
It made it that much more easy to engage yourself in the series, I think.
That's important because I felt in Hunger Games, which this also kind of your explanation reminds me of, there were a lot of characters that I didn't care left, right, or sideways. I feel like maybe in the books they were relatable, but the movies I was like, I don't care. Kill them. Go ahead.
What was really interesting in this one is like even like the first contestant that was eliminated, they still had him have enough interaction with other people that you're like, ah, this kid's like really cocky. He thinks he knows everything. You know, he's kind of set up as almost like a stereotypical teenager, but you understood him.
Right.
And you understood why he was like, why would he do that knowing, but they didn't know at that point what was actually happening. So it was actually just even some of those little teeny characters. There was like a husband and wife team. And I won't tell you, but there's an absolutely heartbreaking scene like towards one of the end eps. And it was just like, holy shit, how could they do that? But Korea is very good and emotionally invested. Oh, I know. Really, seriously.
By the way, as you know, when I'm putting together the show, I have to do a lot of searches to find these photos, etc. I did come across a story I think you need to know, Peggy. Apparently, they have okayed a second season of this show.
That's what I heard. The ending was very open. And so I do belong to a Korean pop culture kind of group on Facebook. And so
hold on.
Like, oh, yeah.
Hold on. Really? That's a shocker.
They said that, season 2 is green lighted. So.
All right.
I'm like, okay, yay. And like the main actor is a huge star in Korea. So I'm happy that that they were able to get like star power into this and that they are continuing on to another. Actually, the one guy who's like the salesman who says, hey, you want to come play a game for money, is a huge star. He was in Train to Busan. He was the dad.
Okay.
Gong Yoo. So it was kind of when he showed up, he was only in it for about 5 minutes. But I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe that guy.
It looks like they spent some money on this one. I saw looked very good. And I'm on record that I don't like things that don't look like they've not been produced. And this looked like something that got produced a little bit.
I think because it's come straight through Netflix, they have the little, you know, a little bit of money.
They sure do stuff over there. Yeah. So is it grading time?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going to give it...
Do you not see me pushing buttons? Okay, go ahead.
No, I can't see anything with you. I'm going to give it a B+. Only because there were a couple of things that kind of detracted for me from it. It's like, you know, the motivation of why things were happening. And, you know, it was a little bit predictable in a lot of parts. So I'm just like, well, okay. Yeah. But so that's the only thing that really detracts from it. I think the acting was so well done. Characters developed, the production very high. I was super impressed with it.
There is something going on we have to tell you about.
Hang on. There are 9 episodes, Michael.
Oh, there's
that was for the chat.
Yeah. Well, there's something else going on in chat. I have to bring this up here. Media Ghost is asking about your scream, Peggy. They would like to hear you scream, but
no one's gonna know. Just like space, no one's gonna hear me scream.
Yeah, you have to. I'm sorry, but you do need to go into Scream at the Screen and get that that program and watch that over and over. And it makes a dandy ringtone, by the way, folks. So you'll want to do that immediately. Okay, it is time now. We are going to go to Mike. What have you been watching? Mike Exler. So you know who you are. I put a photo of you up there, Mike. What have you been watching?
So I decided to watch on Netflix. I believe this is a Netflix exclusive. No One Gets Out Alive. The 2021 film. I'm not going to talk about the director and cast because it's relatively unknowns that have made this film. The basic gist of this film is that an immigrant in search of the American dream ends up in a boarding home and finds herself in a nightmare she cannot escape. So very much look and feel of a haunted house film. So immediately my interest was piqued, so I decided to watch it. That was my mistake.
Let the shitting begin. Go ahead.
So it basically tells the story of a lady in Cleveland. Sorry that it had to be in Cleveland.
I'm out.
All places. So she's looking for a cheap place to live. And like I said, you know, she finds a flyer and she moves into this boarding
cheaper
house.
Cheaper than Cleveland already?
I guess
there
so.
There it is.
Now, I found it interesting. This boarding house it looks like a haunted house. It was really cool looking, actually. And I will say the film looks really good. It looks produced. It's, you know, it looks like a film that could be in the theater. So it definitely doesn't have that indie type feel, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I know.
So she moves into this boarding house, and the first rule, it's women only. It's run by a male, this older mid-age guy. And so I thought that was kind of odd. Maybe a red flag. I don't know. But it was ignored. So let the film continue, I guess. The feel was good. It felt like a horror film when it started. And throughout the film, it felt like a horror film. It wasn't like a drama wrapped in a cloak of a horror film. So right. I appreciated it for that.
Okay.
So there's a scene at the beginning. It's not like the first scene, but it's in the beginning. And it really captures you. It's kind of like, bam, here we go. And I was really invested into it. I was like, man, this is going to be cool if it continues like this. And then it grinds to an absolute halt of a film. It just, it has to speed up to stop. I have no other way. It's just painfully slow. Like I said, the acting is fine. The directing, cinematography, all good. It just never moves forward. They just look at the most mundane shit that has nothing to do with really the over arc of the story instead of telling the fucking story. I just, there's so many things that do not line up in this film, do not make sense. It's like they didn't even attempt to have a beginning, middle, and end of this story.
I wrote down pacing was what you were going to rip on this movie about before you started, and it sounds like I was right. It sounds like it's a pacing problem, which we find so often. It's not
even... Well, pacing's not even the biggest problem of this film.
Okay.
It needs to figure out what the hell it is.
Okay.
There's three genres wrapped in this film. And I don't know if I can say the three genres because I don't want to spoil this masterpiece for anybody. But
sarcasm.
Yeah.
Oh, so much sarcasm, I can't breathe.
I wrote down here, the film needs to stick to one genre. It's trying to hit all the notes of three separate genres, and I think it detracts from the storytelling. It's like, okay, here's this genre, and here's the tropes of this one, so we got to hit all those and then quickly move to this one. And it's like, man, if you just concentrated on one or maybe two, it might have been good. When things finally move a little in the film, I completely stopped caring about what any of these people were doing or what happens to them. I just give a shit less. So I was looking for the gore. Some things happen where the gore does come into effect, and the gore was good. Thought it was decent.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing groundbreaking, but again, very passable.
Okay.
So at the end, there's this reveal, and the reveal is CGI. And again, I don't want to say what the reveal is.
Sure.
But geez, oh man, this could be the worst CGI I've ever seen. And I'm not talking about like the person that did the CGI, like they used cheap software, because that looked really good, but I have no fucking clue what I was looking at. Zero. No clue. And it wasn't scary. I mean, whatever it was supposed to be, it definitely wasn't scary because I was too busy trying to figure out what it was, to be quite honest with you.
Wow.
Still don't know what it was. They don't tell you what it is. They don't tell you why it's there. They don't tell you what it has to do with the rest of this fucking story. It's just trying to be three separate horror films wrapped into one.
Well, at least one of them wasn't a sports movie, because then it'd be about his drugs. But
I will give tremendous credit to the filmmakers. IMDb says this film is an hour and 25 minutes, and it made it to seem like 7.5 hours. it was the longest hour and 25 minutes of my life. My God.
You know, this sounds a little bit like a rave.
The amount of time they showed, she was a seamstress in a factory in Cleveland. The amount of time they showed her sewing on a machine was just laughable at points. It was like, yeah, she's sewing. I get it. It's what she does. Great.
That's when they cut to the swimming pool.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I just don't know who saw this mess and was like, let's do it. Let's put this out to everybody.
Let's buy this and promote it and push it on Netflix. By the way, our panelists here may not all know the swimming pool story. Mike, should we explain that to them? Have we told you guys that one? This is like a running gag on our show. I think it was Paranormal Activity 2, right?
It was two.
They keep going to a shot of the scrubber going on the pool, and it happens like 25 times in that movie. I don't even think I'm exaggerating, and it never pays off.
20 minutes of the film, just the pool clean.
Yeah, it never pays off. It just, they keep going to it. We're like, okay, it's a misdirect, but it's stupid. It makes no sense. I think, was it Paranormal Activity 2 where we came up with Waldo Vision? You know, it's like, where's Waldo? Where is the thing? Malignant does this a good amount with Waldo Vision, where you're just not sure where you're supposed to be looking. All right, Mike, are we at grade at this point?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. I'm going to predict this right here. Okay. So,
I don't know. I'm looking at my notes. I don't know what you wrote, but I'm giving it a D minus.
I was close, just so you know. Yeah. I was really just super because close.
It felt like a real film. It had a production value. But, I mean, if you're into, you know, self-deprecation, you know, or if you want to see how time stops.
You know, I think everything you just said would look great on the poster.
Yeah.
It feels like a real film. Watch if you want to see time stop.
It's amazing. They found the wormhole.
Wow. Somebody could theoretically live forever by putting this thing on a loop. All right. It is my turn. And I am going to be taking on the movie Don't Breathe 2. Now, I was telling the panelists before the show started, I feel like this is the horror movie that came out with no fanfare whatsoever. Everybody, there was so much hype when Candyman came out, and I felt like there was zero hype. In fact, I think they opened this movie in the middle of the night and nobody saw it. I don't know. So, Don't Breathe 2. First, I feel like when you do a sequel, you should probably tell people where you started at with the first movie. So if you feel the same way about the first movie as I do, it'll give you a better feeling if you like the sequel if I do. So I absolutely loved the first film. I felt it was a really neat change in these movies because it was so visceral. Yeah, it's still, you know, a murderer stalking people and killing them, but I really enjoyed the way that they put the movie together. I love the character that I'm going to call Captain BS, or Blind Soldier. Get it? BS. Yeah. Stephen Lang is an excellent actor. A lot of people know him for his villainous roles that he's done lately, including Avatar. But I remember him from the classic television series Crime Story. Did any of you catch Crime Story? Do you remember that TV series in the 80s?
That was like maybe a season and a half.
It was two seasons. I'm not sure if that second season was a full season or not, because there was one season in Chicago and then a second season in Vegas. And Stephen Lang was the DA, and he was a jerk. He was a redheaded jerk at the time. He had red hair at one point. And I remember watching it. I'm like, you know, he's like the first good guy that's a complete jerk. But I kind of like him, even though I don't want to like him. I really thought he was an interesting actor back then. So watching him finally get some acclaim for stuff he's doing, I've enjoyed. Probably Crime Story is best known as the TV series that had Dennis Farina in it before he went and made one of the greatest movies of all time, Midnight Run. Okay, moving on. My problem with Don't Breathe, as one of our panelists might say, what didn't work for me, was there was this problem that the victims, you actually didn't feel real bad for the victims. There weren't any of these characters that you said, oh, gee, I hope they make it, because they were kind of reprehensible. The whole idea of the first Don't Breathe is a bunch of young hoods that break into a house because they figure this blind guy has a ton of money and they can steal it. So as he's wiping them out, you're kind of like, they had it coming. It isn't like he went and chased them down at their house. They broke into his house. They got it coming. So that was a little bit of a problem I felt with the original Don't Breathe. The way that they kind of made him into a villain, they threw stuff in there. Like, at some points, you agreed with him so much, he stopped being a villain. So they would put allusions to some really sick stuff that he was into in some areas, right? And that was the way of making him more of a bad guy. But Stephen Lang, I never felt played that part of the character. You didn't really, it just seemed like they threw some set dressing in there. I would not be surprised that, you know, when they make the discovery in the basement in the first Don't Breathe, that was, you know, a separate day of shooting that they put in later, realizing that people were liking the villain way too much. They solved that in this movie. They solved the whole, we don't like most of the main characters. The way they solved it is they introduced a child character that we could all get behind and root for. Now, I think she's, I don't know, 12, 13, some like middle school age. So she isn't so little that she's like annoying, like all children are. And she's, you know, like an age where she can think for herself and everything, but she's young enough where you go, she's kind of innocent, right? And the way the movie begins is we learn that this young girl, Phoenix, has survived a horrible fire. And yes, Mike Exler, I am going to follow your rules. I am not going to spoil this movie. Though I would love to, but I'm not going to, because I'll give you this spoiler. I love this frickin' movie. So get that off my chest. So blind soldier, Captain BS, he's kind of a domineering type, and he's teaching the girl survival tests with his trusty dog Shadow. Remember his dog Shadow? Yeah. He's back. So the beginning of the film, he basically doesn't let Phoenix go anywhere except the once in a while she's allowed to go into town. He decides to let her go into town, and there she meets a very odd, creepy dude in the filling room station bathroom. Like, she's in the woman's bathroom, and there's a dude standing there. So this is some sick shit. What?
What's the shit? What is the filling station, first off?
A filling station, a gas station.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that might be a Milwaukeeism. That might be a Milwaukeeism.
No, that's an old term. That's what we used to call them here, too.
Yeah. And
she just calls you old, and she's right.
I think I'm older than Tim, though. So.
Yeah.
No one's older than Tim.
That's true. That's true. 1623, I was born. And I only come out at night. Anyway, he follows her home with a gang, okay? And that's all I'm going to tell you, because you can pretty well figure out gang coming to follow girl that is under the protection of the blind soldier. This kind of lines up that, you know, there is going to be some really nice graphic violence coming up in the near future, and it does not disappoint. There are some really sick and twisted. And this is part of my issue with the blind soldier. You know, they're kind of pointing out that he learned all this in the military, right? I'm sorry, I'm watching this movie. They did not teach this crap in the military. They did not. There is some stuff that he does, and again, I'm trying to stay away from spoilers. There's some stuff that he does that I'm like, no, that's not an approved method that you see in the military. But it is great at working that thing with this particular, I'm going to call him a villain. I'm not sure how much of a villain he is, again. But there's something about how they play off his blindness, but yet he's got all this military skill that is a good mix to not make him completely omnipotent. Like, he just comes through and mows people over because he's Chuck Norris. You don't get that here. And one of the things I really like, I pointed out that this young girl is the character that you root for. And in the first movie, you really didn't know who to root for. In this movie, you know you're behind the girl, but everybody else is up for grabs. Sometimes you're thinking a blind soldier is a good guy, sometimes not. You just don't know where everything stands. And I think that was a better approach than throwing in one goofy scene of a dungeon into the middle of your movie. And they really thought this out of how they were going to manipulate the audience. The other thing I like is, and our authors are on the panel are probably going to like this, everything they set up in Act One pays off. Everything. Mm. And you sit there and you go, well, why did they throw that in there? Don't worry. Sit back. Relax. Everything comes. It just doesn't come when you think it is. Now, looking back, I kind of had a feeling some of this stuff was going to happen, but I didn't know how it was going to play out. So it's a good little mystery masked in some of the most disgusting violence you're going to see this year in the cinema, which is what you want. You know, and I think what's nice, too, is in the first movie, Lang was very creepy. And the kids were kind of clueless. So at times you actually, if you did feel for the gang at all, you kind of felt sorry for them that they're so overmatched. In this one, it seems more like a fair fight. And I think that made it more exciting. As far as fear, it builds some suspense, but this is mostly a movie of shocks. This is a movie of, bang, something horrific just happened. The suspense is okay, but for the most part, it's like, put it out there on the screen. The other thing I'll say about this movie, it is exactly the right length. They didn't sit there and say, I'm going to make this movie 20 minutes longer because then I can have people sit in theater and eat more popcorn. They didn't do that. They made this movie exactly the right length so that there'd be enough time before the next plot twist. It gave you enough time to, you know, kill off characters you didn't want to see survive. Sometimes killing off characters you wish would survive. You know, just it did a nice job of pacing itself. And then when it got to the end of the story, instead of doing, oh, and one more thing, like a worn-out Steve Jobs presentation, it just finished the movie. It went into it. And I thought it did a really good job, and that's why I'm going to grade it. I hit my buttons here. I'm grading it an A-. I would probably put the first Don't Breathe at a solid A. I don't think this is quite as good as the first film, but in some ways it fixes a lot of the problems that were in the first film. So I don't know. I could have went A with it. I could have went A. I decided to go with A-. But it is like right on that razor's edge as to which of the two movies I like more. And I think that's a great thing when you can take something that, you know, the first movie, you can explain the concept in about, you know, three sentences. You know, a gang goes to steal a blind man's treasure that's hidden in his house, and it turns out to be the wrong fucking blind man that they're stealing from, because he is nothing but trouble. And I'm not referring to the horrendous Dan Aykroyd film. I'm talking about this guy is just nothing but trouble. So I really, really enjoyed this. Now, Mike Gexler, I know you saw Don't Breathe and really liked it. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Peggy and Mike Cieslik. Have you seen these movies?
I have not seen the second one yet. I really enjoyed the first one. As I mentioned in the chat, you know, anytime you shoot anything that's at least partially shot in Detroit and set in Detroit, I'm probably going to go see it. So, but even though most of the rest of it was shot in Hungary. But yeah, I thought it was really well done.
All right. Fantastic. Well, glad to hear that. I do want to say that in the chat room, we're actually getting some suggestions of movies to take on in the future, like Drag Me to Hell, Abe Lincoln, Vampire Killer, Young Frankenstein, and Turista. We can't say that we're going to grab all those.
With a double feature there at the end.
I'm sitting there, and I think Abe Lincoln, Vampire Killer, and Young Frankenstein, actually, I'm sitting there, and I'm going, you know, that wouldn't be a bad 1-2 punch. But Turista and Young Frankenstein, that's a bit on opposite ends of the spectrum. I don't think that's
cinematic whiplash right there.
Oh, my God. I don't know. They came out of the same person. You know, drag me to hell
in that order.
Yeah, drag me to hell.
I would think Turista and then Young Frankenstein is like a palate cleanser before you go to bed, not the other
now,
way around.
Since we are in Halloween and we only got one or two,
we're always in Halloween.
We only got a couple dead ons before Halloween comes along. We're in October. Do you have a go-to movie that you watch every Halloween? And actually, I'm going to start by saying media ghosts there. Young Frankenstein is my go-to. I will watch Young Frankenstein, and I will watch Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein every year. I watch them absolutely every year. I know they're not a deep horror cut, but those are the two that I watch every Halloween. I think Trick or Treat is starting to become a third that I'm watching all the time. What about you guys? Let's start with Mike Cieslik.
Trick or Treat has actually moved up to the actually gets watched on Halloween, like, point of pride
okay.
spot.
Fantastic.
Again, being from Detroit, I always watch The Crow on Devil's Night.
There you go. That is a good choice for Devil's Night. I think it's got the right feel. It's kind of creepy, too, watching a movie where you know somebody died. If you call it
Angel's Night, I'm going to punch you right in the nuts. I swear to God.
I'm going to be careful what I say around you. All right. Peggy, do you have a movie that you watch every Halloween?
Yeah, Trick or Treat has become my Halloween. And for anyone who doesn't know, this is the anthology film from
right.
2006, 2007?
Yeah, something like that. Not the Gene Simmons movie from, what, the 80s or something?
Yeah, that one.
That's
yeah.
Not the Gene
Simmons movie.
God, no.
But yeah, I watch that one every Halloween. And I think I've started watching Nightmare Before Christmas on Devil's Night.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. I usually hit that one in that period between Halloween and Thanksgiving. I like to hit that. And then on Thanksgiving, of course, I watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That has to happen. I think that's John Hughes' best film. Mike, what do you... Oh, see? No. Okay. Mike, what do you watch every Halloween?
I'm kind of boring. I watch the original Halloween, John Carpenter's, and I also enjoy House on Haunted Hill, the remake, and Trick or Treat as well are three go-tos for me.
Those are solid picks, all three. And the reason that I ask, and you knew there'd be a reason, is because nice. You just have that happen to be right there, ready to go with that, huh? One of the reasons we are bringing that up, though, is because right now on our website, oh, come on, it's supposed to be able to scroll. And it's not. That's okay, there it goes. We have this right here, the Otherworldly Cultures Horror Movie List. So if you'd like a list of great horror movies, we have, I think, almost a dozen lists of five. Some from our panelists, some that I put together. All there. And the big plus is they're all linked. They're all linked to Amazon Prime or another streaming service. So you don't even have to look, hey, where is this thing at? You can click on it. The plus with Amazon Prime that a lot of people don't know about is they have all sorts of other things like Shudder, like that, that they link to. So you can quickly find a lot of stuff right through Prime, which saves me a ton of time, folks. All right, so that's at otherworldlyculture.com. But, hey, there's a lot of other stuff going on out there. Mike, tell us a little bit about thedragonsroost.net.
Unmute, Michael.
Yeah, he's muted.
Ah, that works a lot better. Thank you.
There you go.
And this since I was discussing the technical difficulties I'm having with the site, it's kind of just a little illustration of how technologically inept I am. We do have a sister site that is up, though, thedragonsroost.biz, for all of your ebook shopping needs. And you can get two of Peggy's books on that site.
All right. And that leads us to me clicking half a dozen things. And there we go. Peggy, what's going on at your website?
I know, it's so funny. I actually working with Michael now on a getting some edits done on a book that will hopefully be out when it gets out, but that'll be fun. But I have links to everything that I have ready to go that you can get online or through Dragon's Roost Press or SourcePoint or whatever. It's all on my website, and that's about it.
So check it out, and of course we'll have those links in our show notes as well. Coming up in 45 days, yes, I did the math, in 45 days, we are going to have Horror Realm Convention in the beautiful city of Pittsburgh. I think everybody on this is still coming, yes. All the guests that you see there, quite a few from the Halloween series. You have a multiple-time Jason in there. We have the star of Sleepaway Camp. You have Tiffany Shepis. There's a lot of people to see at Horror Room Convention, and this is where you can see Peggy selling her books. So you can drop by and say hi to her as well. That's Horror Realm coming November 19th through the 21st. Want to remind everybody as well, along with everything else that's going on, we do have Dead on the Bases coming on Thursday here to otherworldlyculture.com. This week, the movies are Killer Clowns from Outer Space and Digstown, which is a sports movie I have never seen before, and I finally got to see. You both have the same Funko Pop. Oh, my God.
It's the same Funko
Pop. Or did you hand it to her? Did you hand it to her? Is that what happened?
Well, that... some kind of link was formed when her face was on with my name.
Yes, that would make perfect sense. Oh, and you're ready for Clive Barker's birthday. Is that the little gift you're going to open?
Say happy birthday to Clive.
All right. All right. That brings us to the end of the show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. A lot of great things for you to check out on the websites that we'll again have in the show notes and are in the chat room right now. Remember again on Thursday, Dead on the Bases here on Otherworldly Culture. And all of us at Otherworldly Culture wish you a fun and safe Halloween. Please keep your kills down to about 3. We don't want to get into double digits like we did last year. I'm talking to you. All right. When you aim at horror, make sure your aim is dead on. See you next time from all your friends here at Dead On Movie Reviews.
Otherworldlyculture.com.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo!